Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this episode is Cues of the Force. Quails. No, now I'm just saying every cue. Word there is. It's Questions of the Force. You send us questions, and we are excited to have answers of a kind. My name is Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok, and I've always hoped that this was Q-Bert, and Q-Bert is a Force-sensitive creature for you 80s video game fans.
I really want us to just layer in the sounds of Q-Bert hopping for the entire podcast and just as a sanity test. Cruel. We don't actually want that. Anyway, we want you to enjoy Questions of the Force as much as we enjoy recording it. We want to let you know, as always, that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are recommending Padawan by Kirsten White. We were going to review it this week, but then more life happened. We are going to be discussing it very soon. If you've already read the book, that is wonderful. If you want to listen to it and have it all in your mind before we discuss it, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for a free audiobook. We're also featuring a new segment that we haven't quite figured out the name for. Right now I have the very boring name, Ask. We want to be good about asking directly for specific help and putting it at the top of the podcast so people have a chance to hear it. Ken, do you want to share our current ask?
Yes, I do. Our current ask is we are building out our YouTube channel. Finally. Yes, I know. Finally, after all these years, we've been rebroadcasting podcast stuff. There's other things up there, the in-memoriam videos and Force Center extras, our great databank brawl animated version of a show that Brian Ward did for us. It's all there, but more things are coming. And to help us grow, we're asking that you go over there and maybe consider subscribing. We're trying to reach a goal of 6,500 subscribers, and we're getting close. And then from there, we'll build out more and more and more. But we just want to ask you to maybe consider going over there. Even if you don't spend a lot of time on YouTube, just want to support the show, support the brand, go ahead, give us a subscription. Go ahead and hit that bell so you never miss an episode, especially those live Q&As that we love doing so much. So that is our humble Force Center ask for the day.
That's right. Hit that bell. Ding, ding, ding. Like Q-Bert jumping up a pyramid. It's all about Q-Bert today. Anyway, we're going to get on to your questions of the Force, not Q-Berts of the Force. We have two questions on Twitter and two questions from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Twitter and Jacob. Jacob says, in Tales of the Jedi, do you think Yaddle had any chance of turning Dooku back to the light? And if she had, would the two of them been able to defeat Darth Sidious together? Oh, I love this, Ken. This is an emotional question, and it's a could they have kicked the evil space wizard's butt question. Love Tales of the Jedi. Love the Dooku part of it. I know you do too, Ken, so I'm really excited to discuss this. So let's start with the first question. Do you think Yaddle had any chance of turning Dooku back to the light? How do you feel, Ken?
Absolutely. Next question. No. absolutely. Absolutely. Her empathy for him and just this understanding of and you know, for what he was saying, what he had experienced, what he was going through was the weapon to turn him, if you will. I just think it was way too late, not necessarily from her, but from the Jedi overall. I think when you're examining the Jedi in this time period and what a lot of what these three Dooku episodes are doing, there's a lot there. We discussed them. Check out our review. This might be a little general sweep through the themes, but the Jedi Order has this. It's rigid, right? We know this. So that's part of the Star Wars discourse when you talk about the Jedi for a while now. It's what Lucas was saying. But when you aren't allowed to openly discuss some of these doubts, you aren't given a chance to maybe explain yourself and explore your own position, the rot can fester, as opposed to having an understanding, having a better way forward. But that can go both ways. That's where the Order is suffering. That's where you and I talked about those rules. And I gave that Excel example of I only cross streets at traffic lights. But if someone on the other side of the street needs my help and I wait to go to the traffic light, the rule is hurting me and them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the Jedi Order is, to boil it down as simple as possible. But Yaddle had that, what she was saying at the end, you were right. It was a little bit of an admission of guilt for the Order, yes, the stuff you were saying was there, but it was allowed to fester in Dooku. And this all makes it a lot easier to believe someone. I'm talking from Dooku's perspective. It's a lot easier to believe someone when they say, oh, the Jedi, their narrow dogmatic views. You focus on that, not the intent of the Jedi, which you and I would argue is one of your favorite things to talk about, Joseph. That's the intent of the Jedi, their real purpose is still very strong and still very much needed in the galaxy. We need them there. It's just the Order itself was crumbling. And Yaddle, to quote Toto in their great song, hold the line. Love is always on time. Hold the line. She would have held the line with Dooku if you got to him earlier.
This is absolutely our 80s time travel episode, listening to Toto while playing Q-Bert.
And having a New York seltzer at a frozen yogurt shop.
Exactly. Playing Miss Pac-Man at the pizza parlor.
Dragon Quest.
Dragon Quest. Anyway, no, I really love what you're saying. I think the way Jacob is asking the question, I kind of took it as, do you think Yaddle had any chance in that moment in that episode? And I love what you're saying, Ken, of I think if Yaddle had understood how tortured Dooku was earlier, that she would have been able to reach out with him with that empathy. You know, she even tries in this episode, right, of saying, like, I agree that the Jedi have made mistakes. We didn't need to lose Qui-Gon. Yaddle is walking away from the council, perhaps walking away from the Order, but not what the Order stood for, right? It's a very Yaddle as Ahsoka moment in that episode where she's saying like, yeah, you're right, Dooku. If the Jedi have strayed from the path of our absolute mandate, which is to use our power to help people, use our power to hold back the darkness. If the Jedi have strayed from that, then let's have a problem with the organization, but let's not, you know, defy the underlying principles, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think she is making that argument, but I think it, at this point in time of that episode, it is too late. I think that this was a great dark side story of the reason that it can be sometimes, I think, be hard to get through to all of us as individuals when we're making bad choices is we're too invested in the way we frame the debate, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We can pull out and see, obviously, like, yeah, Yaddle's talking about correcting the mistakes of the Jedi, using their power to help people who need it. And Darth Sidious is lying, right? That in order to make the Republic better, you have to break it. You have to do all these awful things. Even Dooku is seeing it, right? He's saying, you know, you shouldn't have let Maul kill Qui-Gon. You know, I've betrayed everyone I've ever cared about. And he's wrestling with this idea of, is it worth it? Is the sacrifice of doing these individual acts I don't believe in worth it?
Mm-hmm.
So then you got to ask yourself, well, then when Yaddle offers him a way out, why doesn't he take it?
Yeah,
and that's what's where I think he's too far gone, is that he's invested in framing the debate the way he needs to. He's lived with the idea for years now, as we see in these episodes, that the Jedi have become weak, that they are puppets that support corruption. They don't use their power to make a difference, and it's affected his ego. He feels manipulated, used. Everything that he wants is to take action, use his power, and make a difference, right? And that's what Sidious is using him, is offering him. Use your power now in a fast, blunt, satisfying way, and it will make a difference. And I think it's really, to me, it's about Dooku not being able to let go of the way he's framed the debate in his mind of the action needs to be used, power use needs to be used, and it needs to be used now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said indeed. And I guess maybe I maybe hit some answer. I think in that moment, Yaddle had not a shot.
Yeah.
Not a shot. I think it was all too late, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think for me, it's also just this, we've talked about with lots of the dark side characters of they take a couple steps down the path. They do mm-hmm. some things that are against their belief system for an alleged greater good that usually Darth Sidious is whispering to them of like,
yeah.
Hey, look, you just kill these two people and then everything can be set right and everything will be great. We'll have peace. We often see that of like, okay, it's too late. It's too late for me to turn back. But I think there's this really interesting moment with Dooku here of this idea that goes all through Star Wars of what is strength, right? It takes strength for, it would take a lot of strength for Dooku to go, all right, maybe I am being played for a fool by Sidious. Maybe I shouldn't have made these choices. That's the great strength it would take, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Dooku's so invested in the idea of power, strength, and that's what Sidious whispers to him of like, are you going to be weak and give up on our great path, our great design?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I won't. I'll kill Yaddle.
Yeah.
So it's this real manipulation of what is strength. And I think that's a powerful idea of the dark side of mm-hmm. lashing out in the moment, sticking to the path you started often feels like the most strong thing to do. Where I think sometimes the harder and actual stronger thing is to stop and question what you've been doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at that speech to Vader at the end of Kenobi, right? I sense that you care about Kenobi. You don't. I'm silly, Vader. You wouldn't steep to that kind of weakness.
Yeah. Weak Vader. Weak Vader. Well, we've had some fun diving deep into the soul of Dooku and Yaddle's chance to get in there so we can get to our the next part of Jacob's question. Do you think if Dooku is like, you're right, Yaddle, we will fight for the ideals of the Order, if not the Order itself. I'll come back to the light. I'll make it right, the things I've done. If those two turned together against Darth Sidious, would they have been able to physically defeat him?
I think there's a small window where Palpatine sometimes maybe doesn't expect certain things, compassion and empathy, you're just naturally going to give into hate, right? Oh, you didn't. Oh, and you think you have a moment. You have a spot and a chance to take the shot, so to speak. So that if they get there soon, Dooku turns around and wields the saber on him, maybe they got it. But I just feel Palpatine's got that edge in this situation, and he's withholding maybe even the entire truth to Dooku of his power, of his X buttons and L1 buttons and all his stuff. I think there's stuff going on with Palpatine that even Dooku would be caught off guard with. And so that's why, sadly, similar to Maul and Savage Opress, Palpatine knows how to fight a fight one-on-two here. I think he would at least get away.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's kind of important that one of the arguments that Yaddle and Dooku are meshed in that episode is the council too cocky about the possibility of the dark side rising? And Dooku's mm-hmm. like, I've been telling you forever the dark side's rising. And Yaddle's like, yeah, you might be right. Yeah. What I love in their fight is Yaddle's bravery and strength in trying to fight back is impressive. But her actual physical abilities, she's kind of back on her heels against Dooku yeah. the entire time. Like she's, I take it that she's like almost overwhelmed by a kind of darkness that the Jedi haven't faced in quite a while. Just yeah. like almost repulsed by, you know, the dark side energy waving off of Dooku. So I feel like if she was back on her heels against Dooku, she's really going to be back on her heels against Sidious. Do you think that's a fair take, or am I imagining things?
No, I do. I think that's one of the things Palpatine's got going on here. It's just like, you know, it goes way beyond just my cape and my red blades, because we now think he had two. You know what I mean? Like, the true scope. It's that true, once the face comes down, or the mask and the true face of Palpatine emerges, I think Yaddle would be taken aback. Sadly, because that's a lot of what's going on, I think, with Dooku, when she finally says, you were right. So they can't get the full scope.
Yeah. Yeah. I also just kind of feel like, ultimately, maybe if their entire fight strategy was one of them escape and the other holds mm-hmm. Sidious off, maybe. But if they both turn together, like maybe they could succeed and one of them gets away and mm-hmm. you know, blows the Sith horn to let the Jedi know. Sith alert. But if it's just a straight fight, I think Yaddle is overwhelmed by the darkness in Sidious. It's not a thing the Jedi have been preparing themselves for. Mm-hmm. Even though it should be one of their central tenets. And I think Sidious just knows Dooku's weak spots emotionally and tactically way too well yeah. at this point. He's been studying him. He's been manipulating him. He knows he's got his number.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what he does, right? He has a list of areas he can hurt you. And he's only, I think, defeated when things really catch him off guard. Vader mm-hmm. and Jedi, Rey and Exegol.
No, absolutely. Any other thoughts on this question?
Look, would have been a fun fight. And, Dooku's such a compelling character. But don't forget, he made a choice.
Yep. I wanted him to make a different choice, but sadly, he did not. We're going to move on to our next question. Thank you, Jacob, for that one. We're going to Aaron Motes. Aaron asks, if Force Center was hosting a dinner party for 5 or 6 guests, who would you invite and why? When I pulled this question, Ken, I almost texted you and said, hey, we got this question. How do we want to interpret this? Do we want to interpret it as real life? Do we want to interpret this as Star Wars characters? What do we want to do? And I decided to choose chaos. So this question's wide open. I have no idea how you took it. How did you interpret it?
Well, you know, it's funny. I went right to characters. I guess you could say, you could have Star Wars guests over. So in that case, I'm, bringing Favreau and his Cubanos over, and we're having a good meal, and we're starting there. We're building up. But I went characters.
Okay.
Characters. So, yeah. Did you go in the same ballpark there? Or?
For some reason I read it as like real life, but I made a real life list and a Star Wars characters list. So I'm very curious to see where you ended up.
All right. Yeah. So character wise, Sly Moore apparently is who you need at your table. Sly is just live at the party. But I'm not going to invite Sly to my party. So I chose about six people here. Yeah. All right. So Leia, always Leia. And I want General Leia. I want that era Leia, maybe a little bit after Last Jedi, a lot on her mind, mm-hmm. but I want that Leia, much like Carrie Fisher at one point was just like, F it. I'm telling you what you need to hear. And I'm going to be funny while I do it. So it's very hard to not mix up the two. That's what Carrie would say for years, right? We are the same. Leia. Then I want a little bit of it's a dinner party. I want a little class to it. I'm inviting Garza Fwip. I love Garza. Jennifer Beals did such a great job with that role. And she would be able to communicate all sides of the conversation, right? She's able to go to the rarefied air, but her beginnings were probably a little bit in the dirt. And I think she'd be a great, interesting person to have, just have good conversation with. And as we saw, she understands. She understands the themes of people. And her speech to Chrysanthemum is memorable for that reason. So she'd be good at the party. But then I need a middle. I need someone who's kind of the gregarious one right in the middle of the table. It just been able to carry the conversations, be entertaining, bring some energy. So I'm going Greef Karga. He'd be going, potatoes! Potatoes, all the other food items hate you. He's near the star. So he's right there. And then next to him, it's a twofer here, but I want Obi-Wan Kenobi Clone Wars. I feel is that era Kenobi's the sassiest of Kenobi's. I think he remains sassy throughout his life, but that Kenobi who trades barbs with Satine, that's the guy we want at this party. And right next to him is Hondo Ohnaka, the other side, because they could go at each other. Hondo could be one of those people that dominates. And I have friends like that where you're like, tonight's not the night for him. We're not inviting him to this event because it's going to be all about him. But I think it'd be fun because I think Greef and Hondo would cancel each other out. And then the final one, it's an X factor. To add a little tension to the party, Luthen Rail in disguise. Shop owner, art collector Rail, doing the hand movements, the wig, everything. Just kind of reading the table, but having that underlying tension where he's like, oh my God, I love this food. Pass the gravy, because the gravy is all I've got in this world. Like, I want him to bring some tension.
This is so great because you've picked characters who are definitely charming, definitely going to have an interesting conversation, but also who have specific relationship with food and drink. Hondo's been known to poison food. Yes. Yeah. The actor of Greef Karga, of course, famous for you have yourself a stew. So is Greef Karga just taking little bits of food so he can make a later stew for himself and all the quacking monkey lizards that apparently live on his planet now.
Yeah.
That is great. We have some not surprising overlaps on our list. But I started the exact same place I started with Leia. Leia at any age would be fascinating. But been around the galaxy a few times, seen some stuff, older general, princess, Jedi Leia would definitely be the one that I would want to be the kind of leader of the party. Look, almost any Star Wars questions, which character, one of my answers is going to be Obi-Wan, but I agree with you. He's the character that we have seen enjoy sitting down, having a drink, having a chat. We know that he loves verbal sparring. We know that he loves to poke and prod and see what people really think. And we know that when he gets kind of offended, he's very clear about his own opinion, right? Great banter with him and Satine. He's a dinner party MVP as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
But then I wanted to shake it up a little bit and be like, who is somebody who you feel like would be the life of the party in a really supportive way, entirely charming by themselves, but would not dominate, would be utterly charming, but make sure that there's room for everybody in the conversation. In my mind went to Mr. You're Doing Great, Buddy, Cher's Jacket, Poe Dameron.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Right? Like, because Poe's just going to bring people in. He's going to make it warm and friendly. He's going to be completely honest and say what he means to. And then I thought we need even more honesty. I think we need to offset all of these sly, intelligent people. Somebody who's going to be brutally direct. There are plenty of options in Star Wars, but I want B2 Emo there. To just shout what he needs and feels. And I want a droid perspective at this table for sure. And then I get down to some hard choices of who to invite. Cause how many do I use? 1, 2, 3, 4. Only got 2 slots left. I think I'm going to have to go with some wild cards now to really make it an eventful dinner. I want a Din Djar in there.
Oh, wow.
Partially for the awkwardness of, is this a part in his life where he's willing to even half lift his helmet to sneak a bit of food in there? Right. Will he only drink things from straws? Yep. But then this would be such a learning experience for him about the rest of the galaxy. So that would be fun, of all the things that he didn't know. It's like, but I was told this, but I was told that. Is that a Jedi thing? to see him, his warming relationship with droids with B2 Emo would be great. And then I'm going to close out with the real wild card. I would want to see this. Would I want to experience this? I think so. I don't know. I'm doing it. Jar Jar.
Yes.
Jar Jar is somebody we've seen at dinner parties. There's a great Clone Wars episode where he is trying to be a distraction with pretty impressive juggling tricks.
That's right.
Well, we've seen him be allegedly rude, according to Qui-Gon's grabbing of his tongue. But it would be great to see his perspective right there with B2 Emo, somebody who doesn't trade in hyperbole and half truth and wry meaning, but pretty blunt, direct meaning. It would be great to have them at the dinner table as well.
Wonderful list. You're so right, too. You got to have sometimes you can have dinner parties and there's people who take the microphone, so to speak, and don't give it up. Even but not bad intentions. Poe, I think, would be the antithesis of that. He'd be like, hey, partner, give me that microphone. This other person talked to him. Well, I think that would work. And then the droid's good too. I thought, would L3 be a great dinner party guest? On one side, yes. But L3 is always, to me, heart or processor in the right spot. But maybe one of those people that just can't read the room, right? So it might get a little aggressive, might be a little, you'd have to pull her off a guest. Hondo would say something, but I agree with you, a good droid. So B2E was a great choice.
Yeah, no, I considered L3 as well, but I feel like there might be only one topic at the dinner table that night. Understandably so. And I'm going to leave my real life answers a mystery, because I think that's plenty of answers. It will come up again in the future, I'm sure. Any final thoughts before we take a quick break?
No, I'm now someone's firing up that question in the bullpen. They're going to ask us directly, though.
Real humans you want to eat food with. Fun Star Wars question. Thank you, Aaron, for the very fun question. We will be back in a moment to take questions from our patrons on Patreon.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back to answer more cues of the Force. The tension is high. What 80s reference will come next on this podcast? Who knows? We're going to a longer question with some backstory, which we absolutely are happy to get. We love to understand where people are coming from when they ask us these questions. So this comes to us from Edelardo Fuente. Edelardo says, hello, Joseph and Ken. Ahsoka is one of my favorite characters in Star Wars. She started as an annoying Padawan and turned into an amazing champion of the light side. That's why I struggle with her live action portrayal so far. I like The Mandalorian, but it doesn't connect with my soul like the Obi-Wan Kenobi show did. I hope season 3 changes that, but let's go back to Ahsoka. When I first saw her on the show, I thought, whoa, it's her, amazing. But then she spoke, and it wasn't her. Something was missing. On the animated side, even after all her hardship, Ahsoka always had a warmth in her voice, the sound of hope, but not here. Maybe it's because of the story, but still. I think Rosario Dawson is a great actress, but so far it doesn't work for me. I know a lot of it comes from my admiration for Ashley Eckstein in her portrayal of the character in The Clone Wars, Rebels, or the audiobook from E.K. Johnston. It's not easy to fill someone else's shoes. I'm not trying to be negative. I know all too well how someone's opinion can affect you. As someone who loves the sequel trilogy, I'm not trying to hurt others with my words because I know how it feels. So I'm hoping you may offer words of wisdom on the subject. Also, how do you reconcile the fact that we can use James Earl Jones on every appearance of Darth Vader, even going so far as to save it for the future, thanks to the Ukrainian company you talked about a few weeks ago, or use de-aging technology for Luke Skywalker for The Mandalorian, but we can't do that for Ahsoka? Is it because she comes from the animated side and is not as important? I'm still looking forward to the Ahsoka TV show. I hope reading my message wasn't a chore. Thanks, Force Center, for all the joy, and hope you bring us. May the Force be with you. Well, I will start by saying it was not a chore to read your question at all. I really want to thank you for bringing up something that you are challenged by and bringing it up from your perspective, because I think that's what's really important. We're never against disliking something in Star Wars. It's all about the way it's expressed. Where we're coming from here on Force Center. What are your thoughts on that, Ken?
Yeah, simply because I'm in that ballpark too, where Kenobi, the series, Obi-Wan Kenobi, just found my heart a lot quicker and a lot deeper than The Mandalorian, which I enjoy on a different level. And that's just personal preference. It's personal experience, perspective. It's what grabs you. And that's always okay. So I'm with you on that. And yeah, I think it's very important to choose your words carefully, sometimes to the point where it might seem annoying, you know, where you and I always joke about our caveats. Mm-hmm. I just think in this day and age where communication is just at everyone's fingertips, and it's all a bunch of loud noises if you're not careful. I sometimes maybe even lose my cool a little bit or don't choose my words carefully, and it does come off as a little bit more stringent and insulting. And that's, you know, sometimes, like, again, I can lose my temper, but, like, yeah, I think it's important. So I really respect the framing of this question of, it's something I'm not working with. It's not working with me, but I don't want that to step on anyone else's joy. It's very important.
Yeah, yeah. And being open to the possibility of how could this become more joyful for me? Maybe it won't. You know, maybe in our discussion of this, we don't end up helping Adelardo at all, but I hope we do. And, but just the fact that this question is framed as like, hey, I'd love to enjoy this more. You know, maybe the Ahsoka TV show will be different. I think that's important, too. So yeah. No problem bringing up a thing that you're struggling with. I think that's a part of celebrating Star Wars is sometimes a celebration just flows, and sometimes something bumps for you and you're looking for a way in to enjoy it. So let's get into that, Ken. There's a couple different questions here, mm-hmm. I think, kind of the differences in characterization and is there a why for that? And then also just sort of I'll use this scary word, the tension in Star Wars right now about legacy characters, honestly, mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. When is a recasting an of course thing, and when is it, ooh, we shouldn't do that. There's some back and forth on that right now in Star Wars. So where do you want to start? Do you want to talk a little bit about the recasting or about the sort of the interpretation of Ahsoka in the show?
Maybe the recasting.
Okay. Yeah, let's start there.
I get it. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the wonderful points here on these three characters, Ahsoka, Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader. The easiest one for me is Darth Vader. You know, character in a mask. It's an iconic voice. It does not mean it has not been done wonderfully elsewhere. I always like to highlight Scott Lawrence's performance as Vader in several spots. It's you can no longer say, well, you need James Earl Jones knows how to act the performance. Now it's a different thing. It's not easy. I don't want it to sell it as easy, but it makes a little bit more sense for me. The Luke Skywalker one, I don't think it's universally received well. I have a lot of friends who are like, nope, immoral, nope, bereft of creativity. It's holding on to the past. And I have other people, including Mark Hamill himself, tweeting out like, don't say, you know, that picture of him in the role. Don't say I'm not involved. Don't say mm-hmm. another thing there. I think it works for me. One, I think the first appearance didn't necessarily work for me in terms of appearance. I think it was a little rough, and they've gone back and maybe fixed that up. I think that's fair to say. The technology is going to grow, but it does work for me because of who Luke is at this time. I think if it was farm boy Luke, you'd have a lot more difficult time making it work. I think more bouncy, you know, real world kind of character versus a quiet, thoughtful Luke. So I think it works on that, but all that doesn't get to the Ahsoka one. I get it. I just think taking Rosario out of it, I just think, I think it would have been a tough sell for me as Ashley in that live action role. And I can't fully explain why, because I think she's super talented and Ahsoka grew to be one of my favorite characters because of what she brought to it. And she understands the character. And I understand why it's a bit of a minefield to step through. And I have my honest answer, Joseph, I have no good answer for it. Mm-hmm. I just think it is what it is. And some of it might be very real world that we don't know the whole story of. I'm not even saying that in like a bad way, just who knows, but this is where we're at. And I just think all three of those characters are almost different categories for me on the recastings or not.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that there is a real wrestling with legacy characters who started in live action, right? Mm-hmm. Is that all the different opinions of, is that more distracting to have new actors, Luke Skywalker? There are a lot of people who wanted that, right? But yeah, mm-hmm. but Mark Hamill is directing the performance, basically, is what we're being told. Mm-hmm. through the behind the scenes things. Obviously the up and down with different people's strong opinions about whether or not recasting a young person as young Han Solo, if that worked or not, you know?
Yeah.
I think Vader is to me, a story of opportunity. Yeah. Cause going back to the public radio adaptations where Brock Peters is Vader, you know, there's been a lot of Vaders, but I think there's this opportunity with this technology, mm-hmm. with the, thumbs up, the legal and moral thumbs up from James Earl Jones himself, yeah. to continue that legacy. I think it is about opportunity, you know,
mm-hmm.
whereas something like Peter Mayhew, you know, physically couldn't continue as Chewbacca. So sadly passed on. And so that legacy has been passed on, you know, which is not one I think that people really struggle with as mm-hmm. much, you know? So I think it's about the feasibility, the practical feasibility with some legacy characters.
Yeah.
I think for me with the Ahsoka, I totally empathize with Ashley Eckstein's voice is so much what that character is. You know, I've been rewatching Rebels where she comes in and she's quite muted compared to the Ahsoka that we knew. She's playing everything pretty close to the heart, you know, and that, but that warmth that Adelardo is talking about is still there.
Yeah.
So I really, really get that. I think for me, there's a couple things that I think about. Of there is just the honesty of outside of Star Wars, if you're asking me, do voice actors have the same status that live screen actors do? No, just a brutal honesty. It's ugly, unfortunate. I don't entirely agree with it, but in Hollywood, no, they don't have the same status. The most popular voice actor in the world can't get a project made when you're pitching a project if you attach a popular voice actor. If you attach a very popular live action actor, that ups your chances of selling the project. So there is a reality there in Hollywood right now. I'm not saying that's what happened with Ahsoka, with the upcoming Rebels characters in the Ahsoka television show. I wasn't in the room. I don't know. But in Hollywood, yes, they don't have as much juice. So I think there's a thing that I'm like, that's always a possible factor. I don't know. I think another thing with the recasting of Rosario Dawson is like, I want to be sure to listen to all the voices, particularly when it's something that impacts people more strongly because of their life and their history. Mm-hmm. I know that there are a lot of people who feel strongly that Ahsoka has always been coded as a person of color, so wanting that representation in her live action casting. So I try to be, you know, mindful and listen to all those debates, and I don't feel like I am equipped to particularly weigh in, but I know that that is a factor for some people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think for me, there are just so many factors in recasting her that I don't know. I can't know. I can have an opinion about this part of it. I don't have an opinion about this part of it. I don't think any of the recasting with characters is one-to-one. I don't think it should be one-to-one. Mm-hmm. That if we do Luke this way, we should do Vader this way, we should do Ahsoka this way, we should do Sabine this way. I don't think it should always be a one-to-one. So at the end of the day, for me, I'm just sort of like, I'm sorry that the recasting is hard for some viewers. I'm sorry if it's hard for the voice actors, but I want to put my focus on is this character shining in the story, because the recasting conversation is so complex and so difficult.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, the animation live action divide is still very strong. Still very strong. I mean, you know, Joseph is an animation writer yourself. It's the noses that are people look down over you on are plentiful.
Yep, it does happen. And again, I can't say enough. I don't know if that's a factor or not.
Yeah,
it's a factor in Hollywood. I don't know if it was a factor in this decision or if other factors were more important. You know, obviously, Rosario Dawson is an established actor, established live, live screen, live action actor. A big deal. So getting into then how Ahsoka comes off in these initial appearances. She's had the two live action appearances, right? In The Mandalorian and then in Book of Boba Fett. I really enjoy Ahsoka, and I enjoy the performance of Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka. I've enjoyed Ahsoka. I agree with what Adelardo is describing, is that there is a lack of warmth, but for me, I'm interpreting that as where the character is in her journey. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the Mandalorian episode, we're meeting her at a lower place. She is clearly still quite broken up about Anakin's fall to the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
She is actively hunting for Ezra, who she promised she would find. We are meeting Ahsoka in live action for the first time at a moment in her life where it seems to me that she is dealing with lost connection. And maybe even still reeling from lost time to exactly where she was during the Galactic Civil War, exactly what was happening to her. We have lots of theories and strong opinions, but we don't have official answers to that. So I think we're meeting, you know, we met an Ahsoka who is young, ready to go, ready to work hard in Clone Wars. In Rebels, we met an older, more mature Ahsoka who is sad but resolute that something had to be done. And then in live action, I think we're meeting in Ahsoka, who is having a hard time. You know, she's dealing with lost time. She's dealing with lost connection. She is trying to get her feet back under her. And I feel like that is a part of what the performance is. And of course, it's different from the Ahsoka we've known, because it's Ahsoka at a different point in her life. How do you feel about that?
I almost could do a sincere and joking Force Center well said. That's exactly where I put down in my notes of even at the end of Rebels, I absolutely think there's the war of that. Ashley absolutely has that in there, but she's a little bit more sober to the realities of what's going on. And by the way, she already dealt with the Jedi Order expulsion slash leaving slash, hey, it was just a test. Sorry, Ahsoka. Hey, they are bad. She's her heart is heavy. And I think putting her a few years into the future from the end of Rebels, and then again, where the post credits, so to speak, on Rebels, what time that is, we'll maybe learn here soon. But I do think there's a sadness, and I do think you're right. She's still resolute in what she's got to do, but there's a little bit of personal pain seeping through in some of that stuff she's saying to Din. And I actually enjoyed that. I actually like seeing a little bit of that hurt to see where we're going to go with this character. A little bit of anger too. A little bit of, even some of the stuff she says to Vader. I ain't a Jedi, so I'm here to avenge Anakin. Like, I do love the little wrinkles in that character, because it just makes sense for someone who grew up from that snippy little Jedi to where we are now. Because I think it already starts to change by Book of Boba Fett. A little bit more of that smile there. A little bit more of conversations with Luke, a story we want to hear. Maybe we'll get that too. So, yeah, I think it's great purpose.
Yeah, and I really agree that she has a different vibe in Book of Boba Fett. I'm so curious to see how the Ahsoka television show reckons with her timeline and kind of puts these things on the map of her lived experience, because she does seem more balanced in Book of Boba Fett to me, and she does seem a little bit more kind of her old self of compassionate and little testing, you know, there's a little bit more, you know, mirthful, but just a lot more centered. I think we can really draw a line that she seems torn up about Anakin with a direct line of, I've seen what, you know, bad attachment issues can do to even the greatest Jedi. And then she's, you know, much more hands off. Like, clearly she's met Luke. They must have had a chat. She has this "so like your father" comment. She's still I think attachment's a real concern, but Luke's the teacher. I'm not teaching him. Let Luke figure it out. It seems like to be in a much better place, but we'll see how that all tracks. Kind of final big thing for me in evaluating the jump from the animated Ahsoka we know so well to the live action Ahsoka, I think one of the things that might bump for people is, contrary to some of the criticisms that are out there, in my opinion, her two appearances aren't really about her. She's there to serve other people's stories. You know, we're hearing and seeing bits of what's going on with Ahsoka because they're the bits that are important to what is going on with Din and Grogu's decisions. And Luke's even up to a point in Book of Boba Fett. There's the criticism that Mandalorian season 2 fell off the rails because it became about other characters. And I think we meet a lot of other characters and we maybe learn their perspective a little bit, but they're all there functionally to serve Din and Grogu's journey and Boba Fett's journey, in my opinion. People can disagree, but I think that means we kind of haven't just really sunk in and said, who is Ahsoka? What did she experience? What is she reacting to? How does she heal? How does she make her choices? We're just seeing the tiniest tip of the iceberg of what's going on with Ahsoka in these two episodes. And I wonder if we'll feel the connection to Clone Wars Ahsoka and Rebels Ahsoka more once Ahsoka is the focus of the Ahsoka show.
This is a great point, because at no point does Din look over at her and go, you seem kind of down. Why? So I think we're going to get that. Yeah.
I understand your nickname used to be Snips. What happened to Snips? Nobody says that to her.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. True. Any other Ahsoka thoughts?
I don't know to anyone out there listening. This is not, Adelardo is not on an island here. I think the change in Ahsoka was a big one for a lot of people because of what the characters meant to so many. Remember, this is a character that goes back to 2008. That's been around a while, Ahsoka. And I think without a doubt, there were some powerful connections. And it was a gear shift also because I think the perception was the Clone Wars team was super close. And I'm not saying, by the way, that Filoni isn't still close with him. He's clearly used Ashley in the Tales of the Jedi. But I think there's a little bit of broken heart factor. And it felt like, what's going on? Someone didn't get invited to the family dinner. And I think that hurt too. I think that's just a reality.
Yeah. Nope. And I think it is. I try to remember that sometimes it's just okay to be sad about things and then move on.
Yes.
And there's a part of me is like, yep, I wish Ashley Eckstein got to always be Ahsoka. But at the same time, there's all sorts of other factors in it. There's things that I'll never know. There are valid points on many sides. So I try to embrace. And then I get really excited about these questions of like, well, who is she? Where is a character? Where is she at? And do we get to learn more and look to the future of Ahsoka with great hope? I'm very excited for the Ahsoka show.
Love it.
All right. Thank you for the question. We are going to move on to our final question from Brian Babcock. Brian says, hello, Joseph and Ken. While we all know that the versions of the original trilogy we watch on streaming or disc are the special editions, I'm curious if you remember that the version of The Phantom Menace released on home media since the first DVD release is technically a special edition as well. Obviously, the most recent change was replacing Puppet Yoda. However, several other scenes were added that weren't in the theatrical edition. I won't list all of them, but for example, when Anakin's cockpit of the pod racer comes loose and starts spinning around, as well as several more racers getting introduced during the opening ceremonies of the race, I recall that nobody seemed to really notice or discuss this when it happened, so I wonder if you recall your reactions to seeing the new scenes. This is really fun. I think it's very great of Brian to not list all the changes, but I couldn't live with that. So I looked it up on Wikipedia, Ken.
Okay. Again, to clarify, so this is changes from theatrical version to the first VHS DVD release, or first VHS release, I guess, which is what I have, and the DVD.
No, I think the VHS, I couldn't find any record. I could be wrong, but I couldn't find any record of changes to the VHS. What I found is a ton of the stuff that Brian is talking about in the DVD. So the VHS comes out in 2000. The DVD comes out in 2001. And on the Phantom Menace DVD, here's what Wikipedia has to say.
Gotcha.
So that 2001 DVD, several introductions of other racers are included. Footage of the second lap in the pod race was reinserted. Removal of a scene of Watto screaming Sebulba. An air taxi sequence was reinserted after the arrival on Coruscant. And that's, I think, Jar Jar and Anakin getting in the air car. And then the Blu-ray release in 2011, 10 years in the future from the DVD, there's a bunch of stuff, some technical stuff about the amount of 8% more picture was returned to the frame. The force speed effect of Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan was enhanced. There's a close-up shot of Nute Gunray and Rune Hako watching a view screen showing the Jedi escaping was replaced for a wide shot with a new effect. The puppet version of Yoda was replaced with a CGI version, which was, you know, obviously the big one. An effects error causing Fode and Beed's hand to pass through their vest was fixed. right after Jabba the Hutt's introduction before the pod race, a new voice is heard from a spectator when the camera is focused on the crowd. Okay. Calls from the Senate to vote now when Queen Amidala puts forward a motion of no confidence have been replaced with the sound of a general uproar. So basically, the DVD has some, you know, pretty significant additions. And then the Blu-ray has CGI Yoda in some very little small tweaks throughout. So
yeah,
that's what we're talking about historically, to the best of my research. Now let's get back to Brian's question. Were you aware of these changes? Were you excited in 2001? What was going on?
I definitely wasn't aware of them in 2001. I had a reaction when you mentioned that Watto yelling Sebulba. I remember that. And yeah, that's not something that I've lived with for the last 20 plus years. I do remember him saying that.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Does it make you want to get out a VHS player and put in your old Phantom Menace VHS?
I have it. Yeah, I have it. I think it's in storage. I don't even know where it is because I had the CD-ROMs that came with it. I carried that around in a book bag to like when I was producing the Schmoes, it was always in my book bag. So I was like, I never know when we need these. and that's from the VHS, I believe. So I got it. I got to give that up. I have the first DVDs for the puppet changes. In fact, it wasn't until we did the Force Center watch along that remember I was like, oh, that's right. I've never seen the redone Yoda. Never mm-hmm. seen it. I've only watched the 2001 DVD. I wasn't aware of them. Some of them I'm learning about now. Even the, because I know that the deleted scene of the extended pod race introduction is there, but mm-hmm. I didn't know that even in the first release, it was that there was more than the movie. So, so I don't know. Yeah, I don't. And Brian, I don't know. I just, it could be a different era where we didn't track this stuff as much. I think it was because of stuff like this that people started going, hey, oh, then there's this thing, new thing, YouTube. I can do a video about these changes. I don't think we paid attention until that era.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, my journey is there was, even with a largely negative reaction from my friend group to The Phantom Menace, when the VHS came out in 2000, mm-hmm. I hosted a party and a bunch of us came and still watched it. See? There was still that excitement. I think you and I had that same widescreen box collection that came with a book and a strip of film, right?
Yep. Yep, that's the one.
It was a big deal. I think the mood had soured among my, you know, Gen X age of friend group by 2001. So I'm sure I watched the DVD alone in my room, you know, where 2000 was still a party. And by 2001, people were like, yeah, no, we saw it in the theater. We had a VHS party with you last year. You go watch that DVD by yourself. The lightsaber weirdo. Go for it. So I think that was probably my path. I was actively reading like the StarWars.com, and I was a hyperspace member at that time, to my recollection. So this is one of those great, like, I bet I knew that then, but I don't remember knowing it. It's just been too much time, because I'm sure it was discussed. I'm sure it was mentioned in my memory. If somebody had said true or false, you know, additional scenes were added to the pod race, I would have said, no, it's always been the same. Because I probably knew it then, but I just didn't remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This is, yeah, it's fascinating. I'm going to go look this up in a little bit more detail. I took a swing through some of it, but it's like, yeah, when I saw this question come up, I was like, yeah, I knew Yoda switched, but that it's.
Yeah, I was excited about the Yoda switch. You know, in some of the changes in Attack of the Clones, I've always remembered. I remember wanting to be sure to see because as the movie was coming out, the shot of Anakin's mechanical hand taking Padme's hand at the marriage was only in a specific, if you're seeing the theater in a venue where they were able to update it.
Right. Yes, that's right.
So I remember being aware of that and excited about that. And I was looking at some of the other changes, and this answered a weird emotional question I've had is, you know, as much as I love Attack of the Clones, it's up there for me in personal favorite Star Wars films. I've been celebrating it all year for its 20th anniversary. I do think there are some moments that are, you know, that are a little awkward that show at that time Lucas's lack of interest in digging a little deeper with the actors or the actors' frustration or however it happened. I think there are definitely some acting moments that, you know, are a little bit more kind of old school wooden. Yeah. And I say that, again, as somebody who absolutely loves the film. And I always remember saying, like, yeah, that moment where Padme has fallen from the gunship and the clone gets her and she gets up. It's so awkward, right? And then I've been rewatching it. And it's like, why did I find that moment so awkward? It's really not that awkward. In the original film, there's a totally different beat there.
Yes.
Where she says, yes, the clone trooper asks if she's okay. And she says, yes, and gets up real quick.
Yes, yes, I'm saying yes to the yes. You're so right.
So I've been having one of those weird memories where, like, did I just respond to this beat entirely differently? No, it was actually a different beat.
Different beat. Man, Sebulba. Yeah, wow, that's...
I have a vague memory of Watto screaming Sebulba.
You open up that because I, you know, look, I know there's an angle to Watto that is sometimes discussed as problematic, which I get. So I'm not here to mock that or make fun. I've always enjoyed his. Some good of a. I don't know. Yeah, Watto tickles me. Maybe you shouldn't. And I do remember saying that in conversations with friends at Chili's. Sebulba. And it's been erased from my mind.
Yeah, me too,
man. Damn it.
This is a really fun examination of how long these changes have been going on, the kind of classic Lucas futzing with some things, but not futzing with others. And, yeah. And, you know, if he still owned Lucasfilm, would he be futzing till the end of the time? Would the 4K, you know, release of Star Wars have a different version of the infamous Han Greedo McClunky scene. Who knows?
Yeah.
So there's that aspect of it. There's also just for me this great sort of time travel of, like I said, I was probably reading the hyperspace. Mm-hmm. I was probably reading the StarWars.com website, and I probably knew, ooh, DVD's got more pod rays. But because I didn't have friends who were super invested in discussing it with me, I certainly didn't have a podcast, then I experienced it differently. So the way we experience the media sometimes changes the media itself, the story, is a fascinating thing to me. And then the other thing that I always want to be really open to is memory plays tricks on you, you know? Always, but as you get older, for sure. I think I've told you before about did a rewatch with my wife of Star Wars Deep Space Nine, and there's a specific episode with an actor from Twin Peaks that I was I enjoyed the episode on Deep Space Nine, and I was rewatching the episode with my wife, and I was like, I can't wait until we get to this scene. And then the scene that existed in my mind is absolutely not in the show. The character describes the scene. But I would have swore on a stack of graves and holy books that the scene was in the movie or was in the television show acted out. But it was just described by an actor. And that was just one of those real wake up calls to me of like, memory is tricky. Things that we are absolutely certain of are not necessarily accurate.
Look, I always this comes up every now and then. I usually go to two things. In a 17-year public safety career, I never had one witness get anything 100% right. Never, never, never. What was grandma wearing? Green dress and her hair is black. And then you'd find her in a blue pantsuit with gray hair, like all the time. It never failed. And I always say, like, I was dead certain X-Wings hit that shield generator or hit the shield at the second Death Star in Return of the Jedi. Me and my friend, and every time I bring this up on the show, Joseph, someone will tweet me out. I thought that too.
Wow. It got in somewhere, somehow.
I don't know, the novelization. I don't know what. I don't, or maybe with the implied fear of that shield, you know, and pull up, you know, that's why. And I so loved in Rogue One. I was like, finally, I got to see an X-Wing hit a shield for real. Like, I finally got to see it. Didn't want, poor guy, but I finally got to see it because I grew up thinking I was convinced of that. Convinced, and then probably convinced myself that, you know, George took that out. You know, you can watch so many different versions of the Lord of the Rings films. And sometimes it's either like, I've never seen that before. And you're right. Or you just maybe you don't remember it. And you're just convinced that Jackson released a different version, which is possible. Possible. So I love it. We just track it more.
Yeah. But now the Watto Screaming Sebulba has been awakened in me. And I think I'm going to be finding some time to Google that. I need to see Watto scream Sebulba.
Did you feel it? Sebulba. Yeah.
Any final thoughts on this one?
No, great, Brian. I love this. I always say it's shared, unique journeys. We all have our own journeys, but it's a shared story. It's loving Star Wars, and this is part of it.
Yeah. And as always, we love hearing from fans who were a different age than us, who had a different experience. And I wonder if for, you know, some of the people who grew up with the prequels and weren't around a bunch of grumpy friends like, frankly, Ken and I were, if there was excitement for everybody knew, everybody's talking about it at school, that the Phantom Menace DVD has a longer pod race, and that's exciting and common knowledge and an of course thing. It might be for people of another generation.
Yeah.
Great questions, everyone. We have a Power of the Light Side entry. This is a request that we make of our patrons on Patreon to just send in something that they love about Star Wars to celebrate. And if you're a patron, that post is still up. Feel free to add something if you'd like. This one comes to us from a listener and patron, Mark Canope, who we look forward to getting lessons in name pronunciation from in person at Star Wars Celebration. Yeah, it'd be great. Here we go. Mark says, my Power of the Light Side is about me being a relatively new fan. I'm here since The Force Awakens, and from that first moment, I have felt welcome. And while there are gatekeepers in this fandom, I have found other fans that have become online friends. I even got the chance to go to the Dutch premiere of The Last Jedi with one of them, one of my absolute favorite fandom experiences. And of course, the Force Center community. I'm so glad I found the podcast and getting to know other listeners in the Discord server. I can't wait to hang out with a lot of them at Celebration next year. Sometimes I wish I had been a fan since childhood, but I also think it's a great thing that Star Wars can find you anytime. And I'm so glad Star Wars also found me eventually. That is absolutely great, Mark. Any thoughts, Ken?
I love Mark. I really do. I can't wait to give him a big hug in person at Star Wars Celebration London because he's such a positive presence in our Discord. I look to him as being someone who could sometimes get them. But we don't have a lot of fights in our Discord. But, you know, sometimes tensions arise. There's a lot to talk about in Star Wars, a lot to take in. And Mark's one of the ones always in the center going, hey, everybody. We love this stuff, don't we? And I just really value him. And Marcus, for my mind here, is kind of a poster person for this new generation of Star Wars fans. It wasn't just 7-year-olds in 2015 or 10-year-olds or 15-year-olds. Mark was a little older and was like, I'm going to try out this Star Wars thing. I've probably heard about it in lore, but here it is in theaters. And I'm always proud of what we do at Force Center for all the many things we do. But one of the things I'm most proud that Joseph, we do with Jennifer is to protect entry points and celebrate different entry points into Star Wars. So love that. Whenever you get on the train is your time to get on the train, the space train. And we're like range troopers. We're going to try to protect you. Oh, wait, that didn't work out that good. But
No, I totally agree with you. Mark has always been such a positive presence in the Discord and on our social media. And, you know, I so enjoy being able to say this was my experience or our experience, Ken, because we're the similar age, and want to know other people's experiences and just be honest about, hey, this is how it affects you if you are always knew Luke and Leia were siblings, right? This is how it affects you if you had, you know, if the Rebels was the first thing you jumped into, you know, it all changes how we experience Star Wars, and all those different perspectives are valuable and interesting. I think they're valuable and interesting for any storytelling, but in particular for me, for Star Wars, a story that is about nostalgia up to a certain point, and a story that is about generational change up to a point. It's really great to have different perspectives, different generations. And Mark has always been one of those really great perspectives where I have sometimes wondered, well, how would this land if Force Awakens was my entry point? And to, you know, have people to know that we have people in our community that was their entry point is just great to me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. Thank you to everyone who's been sending in Power of the Light Side submissions. Keep them coming if you want. And thank you to everyone who asked some great questions. Ken, that is it. Where can people find us?
You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod, on Hive Social at Force Center, or on Instagram and YouTube as well. So we set up top. Hey, we'd appreciate you getting over to YouTube and hitting that subscribe button if you so like, if you so want, because we got more things coming over there very soon. Podcasts available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. No, hey, don't forget we're on Facebook too, Force Center Podcast. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter as well. Get into that Discord where Mark will say, welcome. Here's your blue milk. Sit down. We're going to have a good time. You can follow me at Catnapsock across all social media platforms and at my website, catnapsock.com. Get information, buy my book, do all those kind of wonderful things over there if you want more of me. Joseph, if they want more of you, where can they go?
Yeah, you can find me on social media. At Joseph Scrimshaw is my handle pretty much everywhere. I'm really enjoying Hive Social, so if you're there or want to try it out, it is really reminding me of early days of Twitter, where it is people exchanging jokes, exchanging the art that they love. Right now, for me, what I'm experiencing, a mood of fun and celebration in exchange. So if you're interested in giving that a try and seeing how long it stays that way, check out Hive. I am still on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok as well, at Joseph Scrimshaw. So you can find me there as well. And you can check out my YouTube channel. Just search for Joseph Scrimshaw. More comedy, more short films coming very soon. But for now, that is it for myself, for Ken, for Watto screaming, Sebulba. This has been Cues of the Force.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.